But when he watched, we saw you talk about the Wildeberger, she was worried for you, Tony. She said, this guy is, well, I don't, should I tell Tony what he said? No, it's not.
I don't know what I said.
I said something, is this guy still alive?
No, I mean, Tony, you should take care.
I've been doing, I do take care. Yeah, I also pray about it. There are other forces at work as well in all this. You know what I mean?
Well, especially on
right, so, just so we don't, because I don't want to have much of a chat to you.
I think we possibly, I don't know, what are we doing with the kids? You have to be quiet.
Is that me? Is that me? I just led on something.
That's you, Tom.
Sorry. Sorry, everyone.
I'm pretty sure that's you. Yeah, and that's Massimo. Okay.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right, sorry about that.
Together with the light in your head.
Well, how long can you record for? How long?
Well, I would say let's just do it fairly short, say about, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. That's fairly short. So can you just... excuse me, ma'am. Sure it's actually working.
I am publishing that.
No, I'm going
to
keep
when
it.
When I'm arrested. When I'm arrested, you are free to publish it. Okay.
Well, you can say that. Yeah, say that properly.
Yes. Okay, my name is Natalie Bracht, and I hereby allow Tony to publish this, just in case I'm getting arrested and will not be able to publish this to the nation.
Okay, Natalie, can you just keep tell us something about you? It's me again, sorry. Oh, Massimo. I thought you put it out of the way.
That's fine.
No, you didn't.
It's fine. It's on the lighter.
I have to edit that bit. Okay, can you give us a bit of, just explain some of your background and how you sort of came to be in this situation?
I'm coming from a Jewish background, and most of the people in my family from the side of my husband are Masons. They're working for a non-Arabic intelligence service. And they're very well established in this country as well as in the United States and also in Mexico. They are connected with certain kind of science. My husband has a study in nuclear science and was quite busy the last 10 years, obviously a couple of years without my knowledge, between the Mexican and American border.
So is that military or civil nuclear?
I would say both. And the family is also related to the organization. It's called Nefesh Ben Nefesh, who is preparing for the Aliyah for the Jewish people from Northwest America to settle them down in Israel.
So it was the Aliyah?
Well, that's something of the returning of the people. Of the Jewish people, that's where they believe in returning back into the country, right of returning, something like this. It's just crap.
So what sort of situation are you in at the moment, and what's led you here from that being with your husband?
Well, I'm divorced for the last 4 years and separated for 5 years. I'm coming from the left anarchistic movement from Germany. And I had some connection with the former Baader-Meinhof group. And I have worked for the RZ Revolution cells. I've been 6 times in prison because of this. And one time I have been released because I was too young. They couldn't prosecute me. Well, my husband was in the beginning as well in the left-wing politics, but he changed and left this, obviously, of the pressure of his family, who is a very strong Zionistic movement. These are not religious people, they are not political, but they are business-minded.
Can you say something about Zionism as a Jew? I think many people are really puzzled as to what it is.
Well, this is a movement what is believing that they are creating an old Israel where they know it under the borders. So that means it is going far into the Iraq. It is the Syrian, Lebanon, Jordania, and even pieces of Saudi Arabia and Cairo. They claim this is the normal Israeli territory, and they are fighting for it to get it back. And they want the the Jewish people, all the Jewish people of the world, to live down there.
Okay, so back to your situation then. How did you end up being homeless?
Well, we are not homeless. We are on the run from the police, who's obviously working hand in hand together with this certain Jewish community in this country.
So you can't actually go home?
No, we can't go home. They try to do something on a social way to us so that they could take the children, and they didn't go far with it, and then they put it out on the political levels. And obviously there they have been very successful, and so we are actually on a run for a case what is based on fiction, and I'm trying to save my children so that my children are not ending up with these people and I will meet them 5 years later on a checkpoint.
Can you say something about the case?
Well, I came into this country because obviously my father is a British citizen. I've never met him. I've discovered since I'm in this country here that he's living for the last 25 years in Libya. Obviously, he's in the same position where I'm in now. He's obviously not able to leave the country, or they have advised him not to leave the country, to stay down there. He's in hiding. And from certain people from the Libya embassy, I've been informed he's a guest of the country. Well, because he's also obviously an holder of an Israeli passport. So he's not only a holder of a British passport. We came into this country because I was able to get British citizenship, as well as my 5 children. We never paid for our passports. We have been provided with these passports in the British General Consulate in Düsseldorf. And we got our passports in 4 hours. So we went in the morning at 9 o'clock, and at 1 o'clock we could leave. And we got our passports for free. They even paid the travel for us from Germany to England. And we were coming on a ferry from Rotterdam to Hull. We then have been provided with a house, and benefit, everything what is needed, national insurance number, school uniforms, everything you can think of, even furniture. And so everything was fine, and I was advised in the British General Consulate that I will have a chance for a very good job as a translator. So I did this. And
so who organized this?
Well, obviously the British General Consulate, and because I didn't have a clue about this country and how it is organized, I just took this. They said it is returning British citizen into their homelands. Well, I've later found out that all the other people I've known who were coming into this country, also being British citizens overseas, they never got these things paid. When we ended up here, we got our house, we got everything provided, as I said. I had a national insurance number in the same week when I came here. So everything was fine. And 2 weeks later, after we came to Sunderland, there was turning a rabbi into my door. And he said he has heard there were some new Jewish people arriving, and he just wanted to say hello. Now, I have not a clue where he knew from that I was living with my children there. The only people who knew that I was living there was the British General Consulate in Düsseldorf. And he was coming from Newcastle, Gosforth.
2 weeks ago, you said.
We were coming on the 26th of January to the United Kingdom, and 14 days later, or 3 weeks later, in February.
Okay, where exactly did you live?
We lived in Sunderland. In Sunderland, in one of the worstest places, I think, in this country. And I think this is, of course, done deliberately. So they put us into the low-educated and very unemployed area in Sunderland. So
why deliberately put you there? What's the point?
This is, if I can explain this, it's coming out later. This rabbi obviously was informed about us by, I can only presume, by the British General Consulate. I don't know how open they share personal data and details, but obviously to this rabbi they did. And he came back and he provided me with a mobile phone with £150 credit on, and he said just in case I would need something, I could call. 150. And well, I decided not to use this mobile because it was very unclear for me where he knew from that I had Jewish ancestors, because my children are not looking Jewish, I'm not looking Jewish, we don't have a Jewish name, and we are not visiting his synagogue. He then invited me into the synagogue and I said to him, no, that I'm not religious. And he said, well, he's not religious either. That makes life much more easier. And I was a little bit surprised about this, because in the end I was still talking to a rabbi. I was talking not to a Orthodox or to a traditional rabbi. I was talking to a Reformed rabbi.
Okay, so can you tell us who he was and where his synagogue is?
His name is Dr. Professor Robert Ash, and I believe he's not only a rabbi. And his synagogue is the new Newcastle Reformed New Synagogue in South Gosforth. I later found out this is exactly the same community and the same synagogue where David Abrahams belongs to. Well, and he then said, he asked me about the planning and what we were intending on doing in this country, and I said, well, that I was offered a job and I will look after this and I will try to start my job. And well, the usual things if you are coming into a country to secure your existence, especially when you have 5 children. He then offered me a job. He offered me a job down in London, and he wanted to make me a student. And he offered me accommodation inside the student accommodation. And he said money wouldn't be a problem and it would be pointed out to me what the job is. Well, I'm not a student and I'm also not an art student. And, well, he said this wouldn't be a problem, just I should come down with him there and everything could be pointed out to me inside an interview. This would be a very good job for me. And but one point was, and I was getting a little bit suspicious, that was when he said I should return my German nationality. I could keep my British citizenship and I would need to have an Israeli passport for it. I don't know why I need to have an Israeli passport for a job or to be a student in the United Kingdom. Until today that's a little bit unclear for me. But it became clear for me that obviously this rabbi had a very good connection to the passport section, because he said he could provide me with an Israeli passport with no problems. He then came back on another day. I didn't agree to all of this. He came back and he introduced me into a married couple. What I later found out was not a married couple. They wanted to provide my children. They provided my children with some presents. And this couple intended to look after my children when the rabbi personally, by himself, would like to drive me down to London to introduce me to my new working place and my new place where we could stay in and where we would have a good apartment and everything like this. Well, I don't know if this belongs into the business of a rabbi, but I was a little bit concerned about this. And I also didn't intend to leave my children to people who I didn't know. Well, I then said that I don't want to have this job and I'm not taking this job, and that I'm a little bit aware of what it might be and that they are possibly that they should look better out who they are trying to recruit for what service whatsoever. This was the last time I saw these people. In the next 4 days, our life was turned from the top to the bottom. My national insurance number was no longer to use. The benefit stopped. the housing benefit stopped as well because there's no national insurance number longer to use. The Home Office turned up in my door because my English wasn't very good. I thought that the Home Office is something like a housing office. They are looking after the property. And this time my English wasn't very good. So, but there were coming two men and they were looking inside the fridge. They were looking inside the wardrobes. I don't know why they did this for, to make sure how much dinner I have. I don't know, or how much food, or possibly what I was eating. I then asked them for their IDs and what exactly they were doing and what this has to do with the Home Office. And they then pointed out this is just a normal thing. They are doing this to newcomers to check if everything was all right.
How many of them were there? Were they
two? Okay. There were two. They were in their 50s. They then wanted to see
Did they show ID?
Yes, they showed an ID. They were coming from Glasgow. I was very surprised. So it became clear to me that this is not a housing office, that this Home Office obviously is something different. They then wanted to see my passport, and I showed them my passport. One of the men wanted to take my passport outside with them into the car, and I refused this because this is an ID. And so I hold it open and I showed it to them. And then the other man said something like, "What are we doing here?" to the other one. And they left. They went out. Then there was coming a social worker into the door and said that they would have to interview the children because they had to change the country to find out if the children had any worries. Because I didn't know this system either, and I've had never heard of something like this before, I said, okay, that's fine, if you are appointed to come. They didn't interview my children about any worries. They interviewed my children about, does mommy has any friends? How do the friends of mommy look like? Do they have any names? What do you eat? Are you going to a different school in the weekend? Such things. Yeah. And the lady of the social service who came the first time into the door was a Jewish lady. My children since then have been interviewed for more than 30 times. I always had let them in or had to let them interview the children. They interviewed the children separately as well. They even asked the children to make paintings and so on.
So how many hours would you say your children spent with the social workers doing this kind of, I can only call interrogation, really?
Yes, question. I would say we are looking up to more than 120 hours, because every interview was taking up between 1.5 and 2 hours, and I have 5 children, and 30 interviews.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah? So they then decided to put my children on a child register, a protection register. The chairman of the group who decided to put my children on a child protection register was Sir Jeremy Beecham, who is the major head counselor of Newcastle, is also a member of the same community as the rabbi, Dr. Robert Ash, who first turned out in my door, and has worked former for the social service and was now called the independent chairman of this meeting. And he decided to put the children on a register. Since then, we are facing hell. My children had to go to different doctors. My children had to go to psychologists. Everything. We got something like the health visitors inside the house, checking on the children every 2 weeks, asking them questions. I had to go to care group meetings in a school.
For how long this period?
Since April or May 2006.
2006?
Yes.
So what about the security, social money that you were receiving? You were not receiving anymore.
What?
Were you still receiving benefits?
I had to go to a solicitor and I had to fight in court to get all my benefits and entitlements back. Because of my national insurance number, who is obviously also provided from Glasgow, the national insurance number is sent from Glasgow.
But you still add it. For 2 years, you still didn't have it. You had the national insurance.
Yes. Then I was provided back with a different national insurance number. It was no longer an SG. Then it was a TM.
Yeah, carry on.
Yeah. So, since then, as I said, we are facing hell. They are writing records and reports about us. It is close to absurd, or more than absurd. They always have a new thing to come up with. They say the children are abused. They have been hit. They have some anonymous claim about this. Well, you never know who it is when it is claimed anonymous. So we had to go again to doctors and so on. They found out this is not true. They then said the children are abused emotionally because I'm talking to my children bad about the social service. Well, I don't need to talk to my children bad about the social service because they were behaving bad to them. There was no need to, and these children are able to think. So then the children were provided with a guardian, a Jewish lady. Then I was provided, I had my own solicitor.
So what does that mean? What was that practically mean, having a guardian?
That means I didn't have the parental responsibility any longer on my own. They took it out of my hands. They then were asking me for the passports of the children. I had to provide the passports of the children. We were not allowed to travel. We were not allowed to leave the jurisdiction. And in the end, a couple of days before we were actually on the run in 2008 in May, we had a court order. We were not even allowed to leave the town. They put allegations on me, what I should have done, what I have never done. They obviously were recording what time we were coming home, what time we were leaving the house.
Can you tell me about those allegations?
Yes, well... allegations are that I'm putting my children at risk emotionally. And they put into the claims that these are white, European, blue-eyed, blonde Jewish children who need to be returned back into the ethnic minority background.
It's actually written down, that
it one. Is written down. And, yes, this is written down. This is written down on black and white on papers. And it is that the social services is concerned about the rational background of the children, if this is secured. They are always concerned about the safety of these children. Well, these children, two of them, of my five children, have 100% attendance at school. They even swapped 1 year over, because they were bored at school, or they are just coming from a different educational system, and they were in front of the children here.
But they can't go to school at the moment. So how did that, you know, how did you get to the point where you really had to, you know, take them and run?
Well, by the way of tracing down the identity of my father, what I was trying to do here in the United Kingdom, I was going to the register office. I then found out he was working for the British military as well, 32 years ago, obviously in the eastern parts of Europe. And I was never provided with a name. I was in fact provided with three different names, and it appears that this person is not there. Maybe they have been there, and I don't know what happened to them. I was provided with a number. Through different ways, I was then in contact with somebody of the Regent's Park Mosque, the general director, who is a former Saudi diplomat and the cultural attaché of Saudi Arabia appointed to Germany for more than 20 years. He obviously knew my father, and he wasn't surprised that we were already in trouble in this country, that they were making our life difficult. He provided me with the real name, and he provided me also with some details where my father is living now. This was the man who called me at 4 o'clock on a Friday night, from Friday to Saturday night in May. and he called me that I should leave the house with my children right now, and I should try to find a different way or a solution. I should leave the house, something like this, or I'm going, or I'm risking to leave my to lose my children and something more. He then said that it is possible that, he said, anything is possible now that could happen to us. He then finished the phone call, and that's what it was.
So how did he know?
Well, I presume that that he is appointed by the Saudi Arabian government into this country and had 20 years contacts into Germany, that some of on some way he has been informed about this. Yeah? I wouldn't say that he has a personal interest in this. He also said that everything he's going to tell me, he's going to deny if I'm delivering this to a different person. But if I was interested, I should still listen. And because it was 4 o'clock in the night, I didn't know what to do, how to take my 5 children, where to go to, so I didn't have a clue. In the morning then, at 8:30, 8:30, I got another phone call of somebody who's obviously related to Regent's Park Mosque as well, but is working in the legal system, in the legal service of Newcastle. And this man then informed me that I should leave the house, and he said, I can't stay, not even for 1 hour, it's now about minutes. That's what he said. So I took my children out of the bed, and I gave them lots of pullovers and jumpers on top and trousers, and we were leaving, so we grabbed our passports and the credit card, and we were gone. I later heard that the police came to my door 20 minutes later, so they missed us by 20 minutes. I jumped into a train in Newcastle.
How did you learn that the police came to your door?
Because I have some friends who are living in the area who were watching then already my house.
Did you call them?
Yes. They obviously didn't came gentle to my house. They broke the door down. So something like this. I mean, the other allegations what have been made against me, who are not social, I don't believe that anybody is, in fact, is concerned about these children at all. It is only a way to, it's a way to tackle or to trace us down is, I mean, the only sensitive point what is left now are my children, because all the other things are already destroyed. The existence, my name, everything.
So do you think your husband's playing a part in all this?
Yes, but not completely.
Right. So you got on the train, and then, I mean, what happened?
Well, we got on a train down to London. I was changing my outfit when I was coming out of the train, because I'm quite aware about the surveillance in this country, and I was thinking maybe I will have a chance to get more time than only 20 minutes. Actually, I was expecting the police already to catch us on King's Cross, because it's no problem to find out in which train we were jumping. So, yeah. They didn't. I dressed myself into a dress of a Muslim, as well as my 2 older daughters, to escape the surveillance system. And obviously we have been lucky. When I was on the train, I contacted some people in Regent's Park Mosque, and they contacted some people in the Saudi military office at Holland Park in London, who then appointed somebody else to us to that they will pick us up with the car from King's Cross and provide us with a room. Mm-hmm. We have then been provided with a very, very, very little room in Harleston in the north of London. And I don't know the name of the man. He just took us into his car, brought us there, provided us with the key, and he said, through Regent's Park Mosque, obviously. Well, no,
no. We don't want to say any more, I think, about this, because, you know, it's not how she's being helped. Yes, you know, I'd like to tell her anyway, I think.
I don't want to say too much.
I don't want to know too much about that.
Also, also, I want to talk, in fact, I don't want to record it, just so, sorry, after, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
So
also,
we have then been provided, and I don't know if the money for this room, what we got there, is coming from Regent's Park Mosque. I doubt this. I think it's coming from somewhere else. Oh, we have been very thankful for this. And but I understood that from this point on, this channel was expecting me to walk into the Libya embassy to ask for help, because they have provided me with the information that Libya would take us in.
Anyway, can I just take a step back from all this for a minute and ask you, why do you think that this is happening? Why? Well, what do you think is the? There must be some logic or reasoning behind it.
Well, one point is that this country is looking for my father for the last 25 years. I actually have heard the sentence from somebody who said, we have to look out that you are not becoming a bargain with your children. There is a huge interest of the Jewish community to get also the hands on my father, because in Israel it is believed that my father is sitting inside a prison for the last 25 years and is serving a life sentence there. In fact, this is not true. In fact, he's having a very decent life in Libya. There's a certain interest of the Israelis that this news is not coming out and is not provided to anybody.
But can you tell us a bit more about your father then?
I can't really. I'm only aware of that he possibly worked for many sites.
Because the thing is, obviously, if he's someone that's known in the Israeli press in the past as someone who's supposed to have done something, obviously, if we know who he is, then we can see a lot. It shines a big light onto your situation.
Yeah. Well, the situation is that this country has a huge interest in getting him. There are possibly several other countries or continents who have an interest in getting him. Libya is still not providing him for the last 25 years. He is the only citizen in Libya who is also the owner of an Israeli passport. And he obviously worked for the British 32 years ago. And
I think, you know, it would be really nice to have some idea of, you know, what it is that the sort of reason that might cause people to act against you and your family in this country, to get, you know, it's obviously something to do with the nuclear business, but what?
The idea was coming up that...
We'll be finished soon. We'll
or,
be finished
or I go now, I'm going to see you later.
Mm.
Yeah?
Well, it's up to you, but I will be finished in 5 minutes.
But
we'll
but I need to go anyway, so it's probably better. So should I?
I'll be going back to France tonight, probably, and Bristol. Tomorrow.
If not, you can stay here or up here or whatever.
Well, no, I'll be going back to France.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I call you tomorrow morning.
Okay. Fine. Yeah.
So, because I need to busy finish with the pack and stuff tomorrow. I can collect these boxes and.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway. Yeah, carry on. I know it's difficult, you talking about your father, but you can see how getting a little bit more of an idea, rather than just that he's been involved in the nuclear industry, you know, what politically might make people want to do something.
The nuclear industry, that's my husband.
Oh, right. Oh, sorry, is it? Right. I thought you were talking about that. Is your father? No.
Well, my father obviously is a little bit more of a practical kind. Yeah. And, well, certain information has come through that he was a member of the SAS. And that he has been trained, but there's also information coming through that he was also working for the Israelis, and that he obviously had his working places or his fields where he was working were the eastern parts of Europe. There's also coming some information through that he also has been in South America and doing some work there. The point is that certain people think and believe that if we would have been put under pressure, and we are under pressure, and the harassment to us. Possibly certain people were expecting him to leave Libya and come to help us, so they could get a hand on him. They obviously were able to do these things to us in this country, but they were obviously not able to do these things to us in Germany. This is also very sure. Well, there's still the question why they did pay the passports for us, why they did pay the travel for us, why they did provide us in the first time, where the rabbi did came from after we entered the country 2 or 3 weeks afterwards.
We are speaking to each other, maybe by Skype. Do you use Skype?
No.
Well, maybe we have to try anyway. We have to try a better method of communication.
Have a chat in the morning.
Oh, yeah, have a chat in the morning, okay.
Right. So, yeah, so this could be, then there could be the interest possibly of my husband, who was never interested in the children at all.
Maybe we should hear a bit from the children. Are you up for that or not?
Yes.
Yeah? So maybe children, can you just tell us about living in Newcastle? Was it in speaking to social services, is that true? Did you speak to them?
Yeah.
You did, yeah?
Yeah, a lot.
And can you just, each of you say a little something about that, whatever you want, whatever you remember about speaking to them, whether you liked it and what you felt about it with your mum?
It was boring because they only asked the same questions, really.
What sort of questions were they asking you?
What we eat, what we wear, if mummy's got any friends, and information about them. If we go to school on weekends, what books we read and stuff like that.
Okay, so what did you think was going on? I mean, what did it? Were you actually going to school as well all the time, all of you?
Yeah. Yes.
And so, what did you think was happening? You know, because you've got these people asking your mum your questions about your mum, and what did you think that what were they up to? What were they doing?
I don't know.
What about the rest of you?
I thought that maybe they just want to get some information from us because we live here, and that's really what they've been telling us, because they just say that we need to see what your health is and if you're all right and everything with your mother, or if you have to go with your father. And I thought they were telling the truth there, but I wasn't really sure.
Yes, and that always changed the social worker. Changed all the time.
So it was different people?
Yeah, loads of different people.
I've lost count.
Now look, if you had a say in this, children, what would you like to do?
What?
Where would you like to go?
Back to Germany.
What about you?
Holland.
All of you?
Holland. Up this island, anyway.
Away from England?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's a shame, because we, you know, we live here, it would be nice to welcome you, but we're not welcoming you, are we?
No,
it's a shame. What about Holland? Why Holland? What do you like about Holland?
Because our aunt lives there. And our aunt lives there, and our grand aunt, and she's really nice, and we like her.
And I haven't seen her for 2 years.
Yeah,
no.
2 years.
Maybe you tell why it's that you didn't see her for 2 years.
Because she's not allowed to come in this country.
Because they think that we might do something together that's nice, and they don't want us to do anything nice at all.
They actually said they think that the aunt is posing a significant harm and risks to the children if she would have contact with the children. She's a children psychologist in the Netherlands. And so there have been made some allegations against her as well, who are totally untrue. And they say if she's not providing her police records or whatsoever, she's not allowed to have any contact with the children. So when we were in Sunderland, they then were going that far that they said everything what is going in and out of our house must be addressed to the social services, who is obviously only working for somebody else in this situation. So everybody who is coming to a birthday party first must be known and checked out by these people. My children were not allowed to go to other people's birthday party because they need to check out the police records of these people. So all posts, parcels and letters, everything what was coming, they said they first need to check this to make sure the children are safe. Yeah. In the end, they were asking for the library cards of the children to find out what they were reading or what they were interested in. Well, as we all know, we are using through our library cards as well the internet. So there was no liberty, there was no freedom for us at all. And everything was reported immediately to them. And yeah, everything like this. And eventually they were coming up that we were hiding an illegal immigrant inside our house, what we never did. There was not even one illegal immigrant in our house. And they came a 2:45 in the night with 11 officers, and they searched the whole house. They walked into the children's bedrooms without me. They then wanted to take me to the police station for an interview. And they said, well, obviously social service then has to look after the children. And I refused, and I said, if they want to take me into the police station, they will have to arrest me. And obviously that they didn't have enough to do that. It was going on and on and on. So there were all kinds of allegations against us. Then they said, all right, obviously there's now some police involvement. Maybe the children are no longer safe, even if there is no illegal immigrant. So they even said that the information they have is so secure, and that they even can't provide the judge with the details of that, what has been dealt in with in the police. So, and now they are searching for me, and when the reporters are asking if there is some police involvement, they say no. Of course, there is a police involvement, but not that they would like to let the people know that there is police involvement.
So, have you managed to get your side of the story out at all, really? And if there's been quite a lot of interest in the press, maybe?
Yeah, actually, when we were in court, my barrister, and I was always provided with a new barrister before I got into court. Every time when I got into a final hearing, there was a new barrister. Mostly very young ladies who were doing the first year or something like this. The other side was always provided with the same barrister, a Jewish barrister. Even the judge who was ruling the case was then coming up from Manchester to Newcastle, who is normally not even appointed to Newcastle. It is a Mr. David Rosen, who is a judge, and who was then ruling the case. My solicitor was two times told by this judge inside the court literally to shut up and sit down, or he will be removed by some security whatsoever. And they then appointed a special psychologist to the children and to me, and they wanted to carry out some assessments where they put me down as being narcissistic and having a disorder. And they then said the children have a huge disorder as well. They were talking about a foil or deux. And because I have five children, they say a foil or six. Well, what is interesting in this case, again, is that the independent psychologist who is appointed to my children was Jewish and is traveling up from London to Sunderland to interview my children. Well, I found out on his website that he normally never is traveling at all. We then found out that this Jewish psychiatrist is a member of the Board of Deputies in London and is also a member of the Friends of Israel inside the Labour Party, as is Sir Jeremy Beecham, the independent chairman of the child protection case, and who is also a member of this is Dr. Rabbi Ash, Robert Ash, who is the first rabbi who came into my door. So if we overlook this, I think there's lots to explain, and it explains a lot.
But don't you think it could be just simply that, you know, you have connections going a long way back with the Baader-Meinhof terrorists, and that this is some kind of attempt? Or maybe they think that you are some kind of danger to society.
Well, it is even getting further, because I was tracing down more information about my father. What was not the first thing for me, I didn't normally had any intention to do so, but by all the strange things what were happening, I was thinking could be maybe a good idea to find out what was going on this side. This means that I was coming down to London, I was visiting Regent's Park Mosque, had a talk to the general director for a couple of hours. I visited the Libyan embassy. After I had done this, and I was also inside the Saudi Arabian embassy at my fair, after this, a certain different kind of police in this country was also trying to get me by putting allegations on me. Then I was put down in the paper, what I'm not. They put down that I'm a German convert to Islam who is coming to the UK under different, my intentions are not clear, and they need to investigate. So they were then going into court and asking for a control order, and they didn't get it. I was then in connection with the Human Rights Commission in the United Kingdom, and I've worked voluntarily for them in translation service. And then I've made a donation because they have asked me to make a donation for somebody else. Obviously, this person was not able to pay. I did it then in my name. I made a donation to the Islamic Relief Organization for Pakistani earthquake people. It is then recorded that already by that time my account was watched, and I was called into another interview into Frankland, that is normally a prison, so they were interviewing me interrogating me inside a prison, that I would have made a donation to a terroristic group. They then put the Islamic Relief on the side, and then they said that I would have made a donation to the International Islamic Relief Organization, who is in fact a totally different organization and is put under the CIA to terrorist activities. Well, they also pointed out that they were aware of that I'm having contact to the general director of Regent's Park Mosque. He was also pointed out to me to somebody who was financing terrorism, and so on. So they got me into a different light. But I'm not, so I'm not interested in this kind of. They then obviously were aware of all the countries where I have traveled to. I was amazed by that. They even told me things about myself I hardly could remember by myself. So, it was becoming a different picture then.
The thing is, when you say something like Baader-Meinhof, this brings up memories of maybe the 1970s and real terrorism in Germany. So, I mean, surely you're not surprised that someone's keeping an eye on you?
Well, if we look into the time, I was only born in 1975. And, of course, I couldn't do anything 3 years before and 3 years after I was born. So what I was doing is I was looking after the people who were, some of them are released by now, some of them are still inside political prison, isolation prison, so that means they're in there for the last 30, 35 years. I was looking after people who have been released out of prison who were mostly in very bad medical conditions. So, this was my contact I had to them. We did something, we drove around the country to inform the people about what was going on. This was a case where I have been arrested just by giving a talk about that, what is happening or what is going on inside German prisons for political prisoners.
So, I mean, you've mentioned the CIA, you mentioned the British police and Mossad, although you didn't actually mention them.
No,
you know.
I said an Arabic intelligence service.
How have you... Just wait a second. Last question this one. For most people, this is just something they see in the movies. How has it come to your doorstep?
Well, I would say one thing, it came to my doorstep by my blood. The other point is by my opinion and my public view, what I have made public when I was living in Germany. And the other thing is, it is becoming into the eyes through the surveillance techniques, because if they looked where I have traveled to and where I had contact with, it's easy to create a picture about somebody what is not actually true by only putting through puzzles together.
So what did you discover in Germany? What sort of thing? You know, just give us an idea, because many people, this is just, they've heard the name about Bader-Meinhof and, you know, they know this.
Well, what I discovered were people who, it was told in the German press that they were doing suicide inside the prison. This is not true. People who have been released have a totally different view about this. These people have been tortured inside the prison. Actually, there were people who were trying to kill them inside prison. So there are people who are not even able to walk today. They're sitting in wheelchairs. And this is what I have discovered. I did one thing. I was part on one attack. What we have done on American soil inside Germany. We never injured any people or human beings, but we put a major damage to a military point, and this was during the Kosovo conflict. After it became clear that the Americans were bombing down their hospitals and civilians, we decided to delay these things, to give the people down there a little bit more time to hide. Yeah.